And I breathe in. I breathe in peace when I breathe out. I breathe out love when I breathe in. I breathe in peace when I breathe out. I breathe out love.
Sean Neil Baron writes, "Your body is welcome here. Your body is welcome here. All of it. Yes, even that part. And that part. And yes, even that part. The parts you love, the parts you don't. For in this place, we come with all that we are, all that we have been, and all that we are going to be. Our bodies are constantly changing. Cells die and cells are reborn. We respond to infections and disease. And sometimes we can divorce them from our bodies, and other times they become a permanent part of us. Your body and all that is within it, both wanted and not wanted, has a place here. Our bodies join in a web of co-creation, created and creating. Constantly changing us, scarred and tattooed, tensed and relaxed, diseased and cured, unfamiliar and intimate, formed in infinity, diversity of creation. Your body is welcome here, all of it. So take a moment and welcome it. Take a moment to feel in it. Take a moment to be in it." When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I breathe out love when I breathe in. I breathe in peace when I breathe out. I breathe out love. From what my eavesdropping had gathered, they were there to buy her a dress for the baptism of a new grandchild. My daughter was in a fitting room next to hers with several shades of the perfect homecoming dress, trying to decide which one would best match with her latest hair color. I sat near the three-way mirrors and just watched and listened. So the woman emerged after warning her daughter, "I don't know. It looked way better on the rack than it does on my fat, lumpy body, like everything else." She walked toward the mirrors awkwardly, seeming to try somehow to cover every inch of herself with her hands and arms. "Mom, that looks really nice on you," the young woman with the baby offered in a genuine tone. "No, no, it doesn't. I can't get this. My arms are way too flabby. No, look at this." She pivoted in the mirror for a better side view of herself in this dress, which to my eye looked like a lovely fit on a beautiful woman. "I'm so frumpy," she said sadly. "I used to be able to put on anything and make it work." She paused, and I don't even think she heard the words of affirmation that her daughter continued to offer. Quietly, she said to her reflection, "How do we get here? This is disgusting. You used to be a size 4. A size 4, can you imagine?" she said, whirling around to face her audience, the young woman who calls her mom, and me, a fat stranger. She gave me a quick once-over and suddenly became very visibly flustered. Not that I ever wanted to be a size 4. I mean, some people can pull off carrying the extra weight, just not me. I just look frumpy and old and lazy and so, so awful. But I admire a bigger woman who can look good. Her daughter sighed and rocked the baby a little and in a sing-song voice kept saying, "I think you look really nice, Mom." You know the struggle. She was talking to me now. "How did your skinny little daughter get those jeans, huh? I mean, I assume that's your daughter, but maybe not. Anyway, it's just not fair, is it? They forget that we were young and beautiful once, too. I didn't always look like this. I did, after all, attract a handsome husband and make beautiful kids. I couldn't have attracted anything looking like I do now. I'm disgusting." I wish I had said something helpful in that moment, but I didn't. By this time, my daughter had emerged. Indeed, beautiful and elegant, and I had turned my attention to her and affirmed that whatever choice she made, it would be lovely, and I would support her decision. The woman and her daughter both exclaimed and offered their opinions about which colors worked best on Cadison, too. Although, both women pointed out, "You can wear anything and it'll look good, honey." And then quietly to me, the younger of the two women, the one with the baby, confessed, "No offense to your daughter, but I kind of hate her. Oh, to be a beautiful teenager forever." So I expect that any American feminine presenting person hearing this story will know that it is ordinary. It's typical, and it's happening right now as we speak in fitting rooms and stores all over the country. Self-deprecation and passive-aggressive jealousy over the appearance of other women is just normal. It's expected. It seems to be an unwritten rule of trying on clothes with other women that we point out our own flaws. Others assure us that we're beautiful. We insult their bad taste in beautiful or accuse them of lying. And we never find quite the right thing. We just settle for what looks the least awful and covers the most flaws because our bodies will never be good enough for our own approval. That's just the way it is. And so here I'm gonna put in one more reading today as a springboard and the nutshell version of everything else I have to say, although I will elaborate anyway. It is an essay by my friend Hannah Blank. She's the author of many books, including a book that changed my life. Actually, I have the cover of it here somewhere. It's a book that changed my life when I was a 20-something fat girl in America, wondering how in the world I would ever be loved. It's called Big, Big Love, a source book on sex for people of size and those who love them. But for me, at that time, the time that I discovered this amazing resource, it was much more than a sex manual. It was an invitation to a brand new way of being in my body, an unapologetic way which had seemed impossible and kind of ridiculous before. This particular essay of Hannah's is much more recent, and it's a response to a phrase that became popular among my fellow curvy, plus size, and fat feminine presenting people a few years back. And it became, in fact, the name of a popular movie in 2002 called Real Women Have Curves. This piece is simply called Real Women, and I trust that all of us here of all genders and gender expressions can find some truth in these words. Real women do not have curves. Real women do not look like just one thing. Real women have curves and not. They are tall and not. They are brown skinned and olive skinned and not. They have small breasts and big ones and no breasts whatsoever. Real women start their lives as baby girls and as baby boys and as babies of indeterminate biological sex whose bodies terrify their doctors and families into making all kinds of very sudden decisions. Real women have big hands and small hands and long, elegant fingers and short, stubby fingers and manicures and broken nails with dirt under them. Real women have armpit hair and leg hair and pubic hair and facial hair and chest hair and sexy mustaches and full, luxuriant beards. Real women have none of these things, spontaneously or as the result of intentional change. Real women are bald as eggs, by chance and by choice and by chemo. Real women have hair so long they can sit on it. Real women wear wigs and weaves and extensions and kufi and do-rags and hairnets and hijab and headscarves and hats and yarmulkes and textured rubber swim caps with plastic flowers on the side. Real women wear high heels and skirts, or not. Real women are feminine and smell good, and they're masculine and smell good, and they're androgynous and smell good, except when they don't smell so good. But that can be changed if desired, because real women change stuff when they want to. Real women have ovaries, unless they don't. And sometimes they don't because they were born that way, and sometimes they don't because they had to have their ovaries removed. Real women have uteruses, unless they don't see above. Real women have vaginas and clitorises and XX chromosomes and high estrogen levels. They ovulate and menstruate and can get pregnant and have babies. Except sometimes not, for a rather spectacular array of reasons, both spontaneous and induced. Real women are fat and thin and both and neither and otherwise. Doesn't make them any less real. There's a phrase I wish I could engrave upon the hearts of every single person everywhere in the world, and it is this sentence, which comes from the genius lips of the grand and eloquent Mr. Glenn Marla. There is no wrong way to have a body. I'm going to say it again because it's important. There is no wrong way to have a body. And if your moral compass points in any way, shape, or form to equality, you need to get this through your thick skull and stop with the real women are like such and so crap. You're not the authority on what real human beings are and who qualifies as real and on what basis. All human beings are real. Yes, I know you're tired of feeling disenfranchised. It is a tiresome and loathsome thing to be and to feel, but this tit-for-tat disenfranchisement of others is not going to solve the problem. Solidarity has to start somewhere, and it might as well be here with you and me. Thus ends Hannah's essay. So I don't really know how to preach a how-to sermon on losing the weight of body hate, because it comes about differently for every single person. It's only my hope that if you're not quite there yet, or even not almost there, that you will take a step toward getting there today, and that something said or done or felt here today will spark you in that direction. It is most definitely an ongoing adventure, and it never ends. I thought I was there until I decided that I wanted to pursue this ministerial calling and apply for seminary. And then the old demons I thought I had exorcised years ago came slinking back into my consciousness, saying, "You have a lot of work to do on yourself before you can look like a minister." Never mind the internal work of embodying the life of ministry, I was compelled by my own inner dialogue to think about how my body looks standing in front of people, and how clearly nothing I could ever say or do would be enough to make me ministerial in the eyes of people who would first have to get past the sight of my fat body. And so, that's why I laid it right on the line in my admissions essay. I shared that with y'all a couple weeks ago, and I discussed in great detail the details of my journey of body acceptance and how it was being greatly challenged by the new adventure of applying to school for ministry. And then I knew it would be a growing edge in my formation, a challenge I was more than willing to take on. I shared that essay with you a couple weeks back. Those who were here might remember the story about the zip lining adventure, the one in which I weighed exactly the highest weight allowable for experiencing the zip line with my family, and then I just did it anyway. It was my way of saying to the staff at the seminary that I was applying for, I'm going to tell you this thing, and it will be the last time we discuss it. Now, let's talk about my qualifications and what I hope to learn about ministry here. And I have been very lucky to be able to keep that commitment. But letting yourself go and losing the weight of body hate is a really hard thing to do in the society in which we live. I don't know why it's such a big deal, but we all know that it is. All of us, every gender expression, every body size, color, shape, and ability. We all know the struggle. So I submit to us today that it is essential to at least try if we are to live our faith truly and deeply. Because how can we truly offer to others a love and unconditional acceptance which we cannot yet offer to ourselves? If we are to love our neighbors truly as we love ourselves, I believe that inherent in that commission is a whole lot of self-acceptance, a whole lot of body love. Some days I wouldn't want my neighbors to love me the way I love myself. It's great for me to watch you parade in and out of the fitting rooms of life and tell you that you look beautiful. But the truth is that until I can see my own beauty, there will be a part of me that is judging yours. Because some parts of you look better than some parts of me. And those are the things I will exclaim out loud. But you better believe that the insecure, self-loathing part of my spirit is noticing the things about you that make me feel better about myself, and I'm keeping those to myself. That's how this works, because I would never be as unkind to you as I can often be to me. The only way to stop those voices is to invest a lot of time and work and emotional energy into self-acceptance. Self-love as spiritual practice. It's not always easy. Letting ourselves go, losing the weight once and for all of body hate. It's a place to begin to radiate more love into our homes, into our families, our places of work, our churches, and our communities, and especially to our children. Will you try extra hard this week to do the awkward work of loving the body you are in? Consciously, I will. And will you maybe consider making a commitment to talk to someone about it? Out here today in our coffee hour would be a good place, a good time to start, to talk about the areas in which you need work. And I don't mean I need to work on reducing the size of my butt, but I mean rather I need to work on loving my butt right now. That kind of work. No butts, no asterisks. See what I did there? Just love, and it's okay, I promise you. The world will not even pause on its axis, and you will not, and this is important, you will not suddenly say, screw it all, I'm eating 17 cupcakes for breakfast every morning because I love my body. You won't, nor will you feel any need to know how many cupcakes anyone else had for breakfast this morning. Because we will be a step closer to loving our neighbors as ourselves and knowing that we are all deserving of more love every day in these bodies that we have right now. Everybody, all bodies, every body, even mine, even yours, and especially mine. I'm going to leave you with one more poem today. I believe it was the first thing I ever read aloud from this pulpit about 12 years ago when I wrote it, and it still applies, and it's called Goddess. in a sacred place of honor, in the temple that is my home, stands a gleaming, powerful image of the Venus of Willendorf. Proud and naked, her unbound breasts resting on her fully rotund belly, blissful and heavy with the ripeness of all life, under the sweet milk that sustains it, having no apologies to make for the fat fullness of her thighs grown strong and proud from the carrying of this wide expanse of hips and a rump, the roundness of which has enchanted poets and priests since before time. The wise goddess child who is my daughter calls this image the mommy doll. And she has no interest in the notion that maybe this lush feminine form was not made to look like me. How then can I face this child and not stand tall and be a goddess and in whatever size I am be content? I do not need minimizing panels in my panties or wires in my bra to be divine and full of beauty. Full of beauty, not starving. Not starving for affection, approval, appreciation, confirmation, conformity, or anonymity, but fully at home in the body of this woman who takes up her share of space without saying I'm sorry and still leaves room enough in the world for you. And so to you and to me and to the goddess child who is my daughter, I say, fearlessly and wondrously are we made in the image of she who is most holy, and the blasphemy of body hatred has no place in this temple. Blessed be, and so may it ever be. Amen.